This WBEZ podcast is supported by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in up to 40 currencies with only a few simple taps. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply. Be smart. Get Wise.
Hey, Dan, have you heard of Kalshi?
Yeah, the prediction market that lets you trade anything from sports to alien sightings.
Alien sightings?
You have an opinion on things and you're curious about what's going to happen in the future and put up or shut up, right?
There's actually a bill in the House right now to stop sports gambling on prediction markets.
Will Jesus return before 2027? No. Right? Like, if I put in $1 million, like, I can't lose this.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Stick around till the end of the episode to get a rundown of the latest stories happening right here in Chicago. But first, let's get to the conversation you clicked on. March Madness may be over, but I want to take a moment to zoom in on one major takeaway from the college basketball tournament. It's expected that more than $3 billion, a record amount, was bet on the games. But sports betting is only part of the story. These days, people are placing bets on everything from pop culture moments to religious events. These are known as prediction markets. And now that gambling has started to blur lines with these predictions, there's some debate over who should regulate the practice, states or the feds. The Trump administration's even suing Illinois over it. In today's podcast, we dig into that back and forth. At the table was Noah Henderson, director of the sport management program at Loyola University, Carl Lockhart, who's assistant professor at DePaul University Law School, and Democratic State Senator Michael Hastings, who represents the Southwest Suburban 19th District. Now, I realize I may have lost some of you at prediction markets, so we had to begin with a clear definition. Here's Noah breaking it down.
Prediction markets, at least in my view, are effectively a form of gambling, but so is a lot of financial transactions. So prediction markets are a platform that effectively allow individuals, and it's federally regulated, across the country to place wagers or financial stakes on the outcomes of all sorts of events. We heard kind of that clip earlier about, mm-hmm. will Jesus come back before 2027?
Right.
That is an actual position that you can take on many of these platforms.
Interesting.
When the next GTA video game will come out, right? All of these things. And it effectively allows people to take financial positions on events that could either happen or not. And it is, it's existed for a while, but it has not existed in this form or at this scope or really existed for the general population at large.
And it's funny you say it's existed for a while because, Carl, I think of the fact that just this past weekend, I was out, you know, driving with my husband and we heard radio ads for this Kalshi. We're like, what is Kalshi? And we went home and, you know, he's watching some of his, you know, regular sports videos on YouTube and the ads that kept popping up were for Kalshi. And we're like, is it following us? What is going on? What is that? What is driving the recent surge in popularity of platforms like Kalshi and Polymarket?
Yeah. So the recent surge sort of started back in the 2024 election. So for a long time, the CFTC, which is the federal government agency that regulates prediction markets, had essentially banned prediction markets on sporting events or on political events.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2024, shortly before the presidential election, Kalshi tried to offer prediction market contracts on the election, on who would win, and other similar types of contracts. And at that point, they sued the CFTC, basically trying to get the CFTC to allow them to offer these contracts, and they won in federal court. And so, after winning that case, they offered contracts on the elections in 2024. And once that happened, they got a lot more publicity because people, you know, thought that this was sort of a crazy new thing you could do. You could
right.
bet on who's going to win the election. And sort of emboldened by that success, they then started offering contracts on sporting events, starting with the Super Bowl in February of 2025. And so from that point on, essentially what has happened is that sports gambling has been legalized nationwide through these federally regulated derivatives contracts platforms like mm-hmm. Kalshi and Polymarket.
Yeah. And before I bring the state senator in here, Carl, I mentioned earlier, the Trump administration has sued our state, as well as Arizona and Connecticut, for trying to regulate prediction markets. So how has Illinois been dealing with prediction markets so far? So we're clear.
Exactly. So what's happened is that these prediction markets now are available nationwide. So states that didn't even allow sports betting before, like my home state of Texas, California, major markets now have sports betting through these prediction markets. And the other thing about these prediction markets is that they're open to people who are 18 and older, whereas most states, even if they allowed sports gambling, you would have to be 21. So basically, you can be a senior in high school and you can be betting on sports through these prediction markets. A lot of states are unhappy about that, and it's not just blue states like Illinois. Even red states like Utah have pushed back against these prediction markets being offered. Illinois sent a cease and desist letter to the to Kalshi and a couple of these other providers, and basically telling them, you need to comply with our state gambling laws. You're offering gambling in our state. And now the CFTC has sued Illinois for trying to essentially step into its regulatory space. So this is about the dispute between who should regulate these markets. Should it be the states or should it be the federal government?
Well, State Senator Hastings, you introduced a bill last month to regulate prediction markets. Tell me exactly what you're proposing.
Thank you very much for having me. So at its core, my bill is about fairness and accountability. We have a regulated sports betting system here with strong consumer protections. We have strict oversight. And these sports betting mechanisms, they pay contributions that help fund our infrastructure in our state. And what we're seeing now with the prediction markets, it's an attempt to offer what looks like and feels like sports betting, but without any of the same rules. So the bill that I introduced simply says this: if you're taking real money on the outcome of events in Illinois, you should be licensed, regulated, and taxed just like everyone else. It's not about stopping innovation. I think it's about making sure we operate within a framework that protects our consumers and treats all the operators fairly.
Illinois has received more than $1 billion in tax revenue since legal sports betting began 6 years ago, State Senator. But prediction markets don't pay those taxes. So are we losing out on a lot of money?
Well, I'll give you an example. So everyone watched the March Madness and the Final Four and the national championship basketball game. Nationally, $2.34 billion was wagered on predictive markets. And in Illinois alone, 90% of the sports betting took place on predictive markets. Illinois is one of the largest states in the country. So if you were to say 7.5% of that $2.34 billion that took place, you're looking at about $175 million in gaming revenue that Illinois had lost. And a percentage of that goes to our capital infrastructure fund, which helps restore our roads, our bridges, our schools. And it's a loss. And so because they're not regulated, because there's no oversight, Illinois loses out on that.
Your thoughts, Noah? I see you nodding at some of the state senator's comments.
Yeah, and I think it's even more expansive than the financial side of things here. Illinois as a state has made very, very specific public policy considerations on things like, you know, Carl already mentioned it, the gambling age, right? That these derivatives markets basically overrule and say that 18-year-olds, seniors in high schools can gamble. Mm-hmm. What many people probably don't know if you don't sports gamble is that there are other things that the state of Illinois have stepped in and stopped, such as wagering on in-state sports teams, right? This March Madness, it was very cool. We got to see University of Illinois advance to the Final Four, but on regulated platforms like DraftKings, FanDuel, you weren't allowed to wager on them. That's a specific regulation put in place by the government of Illinois for a lot of reasons. One, corruption risk of local athletes. Two, you probably don't want to allow sports gamblings at schools, you know, in-state because, there's harassment risks. If athletes perform badly, right, students live in the same dorm halls as them. There's plenty of instances of athlete harassment, corruption on fixing games, right? All of these things that not just Illinois has done, but are pretty commonplace across the entire regulatory landscape of sports gambling. It's all regulated state to state. And these derivative markets not only siphon money away from, you know, the 15% of the sports gambling fund that's allocated towards gambling related harms, gambling disorder, problem gambling, education, preventative education. And so you're seeing kind of this decoupling of the tax base from harm mitigation, but you're also seeing these very specific public policy considerations like in-state wagering just kind of being thrown to the wayside by these predictive markets.
Say more on that, Carla. And I'm curious, is the existing state-regulated gambling industry also worried that they're losing money to prediction markets?
I'm sure they are. I mean, if you think about kind of going back to the 18-year-olds being able to use these products, right? If you can get in with a consumer 3 years before another competitor can, then you're more likely to be the place where they go to gamble, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you're an in-state or some other, you know, traditionally regulated gambling entity, then you're going to be worried that essentially your future consumers are all getting diverted to choose to bet on, you know, using these sort of prediction market platforms earlier, and that's going to hurt you as a company.
So sticking with you for another moment here, Carl, federal government officials, they think that they should be the ones deciding all of this and regulating this industry and not the states.
That's right. And this actually goes back to sort of a historical thing and something that happened and is from here in Chicago. So technically, prediction markets are a species of derivatives markets. And, you know, we think about financial products, we usually think about things like stocks and bonds, but there's a whole other category of financial products called derivatives. And the derivatives market actually dwarfs the stock market and the bond market by orders of magnitude. And that market started here in Chicago at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. And originally, this was a way for farmers to hedge potential losses if the prices of corn, wheat, you know, commodities like that changed. And eventually, there was a large uproar about this. And so there's sort of a historical precedent for people being worried about derivatives markets because people thought that the public thought that these people who were trading contracts about the future price of wheat or corn were worried about they thought that people were gambling on the future price of these products, and they thought that was bad. And eventually, the federal government stepped in to regulate these derivatives markets that had to do with the future prices of commodities. And so essentially, what the federal government is arguing here is this is just another commodity that's being traded on a federally regulated derivatives markets. And look, we have this historical precedent that states can't regulate that. Only the federal government can.
You think this could go to the Supreme Court?
Absolutely. I think this will definitely go to the Supreme Court.
Noah, talk more about broader implications here if courts do side with the federal government over the states.
Well, I mean, broader implications, again, my realm is very much on the sports side, but I see this manifesting, you know, a lot in what I've previously said about reduction of funding, Illinois funding of mitigating harm, right? It's sports gambling, again, for those who aren't tapped into that market or industry, has a massive excise tax. Right, in the same way that tobacco has a massive excise tax, that alcohol has a massive excise tax. So again, if it does get to the Supreme Court and we side federally, again, it's looking like we're going to have a circuit split. And, you know, as Carl said, we need to get there or we're going to get to the Supreme Court. It will harm since Murphy v. NCAA, which is the case, I believe 2018 case that effectively opened the floodgates for state regulation. That's why starting in 2018 and over the last 7 or 8 years, you've seen, you know, 40 jurisdictions around the country legalize sports gambling. That's because it basically removed a federal moratorium on states to have police power over sports gambling. What it does is it really takes away something that over the last 7 years has been effectively state police power, which is the ability to regulate sports gambling. Mm-hmm. If this federal derivatives trading is allowed and they're allowed to continue offering sports gambling or products that are, you know, look, feel, and, you know, if it looks like a duck and walks like a duck, it is a duck, right? These are sports gambling products. If they're allowed to continue, then basically states lose their police power over regulating sports gambling, full stop.
Right. State Senator, you know, we haven't even talked about the fact that President Trump's family has connections to the prediction markets. Specifically, Donald Trump Jr. Has invested in Polymarket and is working as a strategic advisor to Kalshi, the competitor. Are you concerned, or are there concerns that you're hearing about the president having a conflict of interest here?
I try to look at this from a policy perspective. And if somebody has an interest in a business, well, good for them. What for me this looks at is, you know, this is a federal versus a state power issue. You know, you have the CTFs or CFTC asserting exclusive federal jurisdiction over prediction markets. And we have states like ours that are arguing that functionally sports betting, their sports betting mechanisms should fall under state gaming laws. And I think that key court rulings are going to shape the landscape. I think on the 6th, this past Monday, the Third Circuit just sided with prediction markets. There's over 20 lawsuits across the country right now. Mm-hmm. I think Nevada is going to be a very interesting one to watch because if the court sides with this being sports betting, it'll definitely go to the Supreme Court. But just because it's regulated, even if it's regulated by the CFTC, it doesn't preclude the state of Illinois from regulating these entities. Mm-hmm. There's various mechanisms that we can do, whether that's age restrictions, addiction protection. We could also do a per transaction fee. And some of those per transaction fees that we could implement could shut down predictive markets altogether and shift them into the sports betting mechanisms. The bottom line, though, the way I look at it is that this is headed either towards a Supreme Court decision or a congressional fix, because right now the law hasn't changed to catch up with technology.
Right.
I think in Illinois we're doing very progressive things to help that.
So I kind of want to hear from all of you on this. I mean, since you can bet on absolutely anything, as we've made clear, are there concerns that prediction markets could incentivize insider trading or manipulation of daily life in a way that we've never seen before? What do you think, State Senator?
Well, I think in terms of manipulation of an outcome, yeah, I think there's very problematic wagering that takes place. One, this past month was a wager on Armageddon and whether or not the world would end. I think that's problematic in and of itself, because if you ask yourself the fundamental questions of what happens if you win the bet, where's the money go? And then is the money held in an escrow? And then who's going to be around to pay it? Those are some the assassination of world leaders. That's another problematic bet.
Right.
You can even look at the Super Bowl. Hey, is somebody going to streak across the football field? I mean, that even gets more interesting. I think the last Super Bowl, they had a decoy, and then they had the guy with the shirt off. So, I mean, there's ways people can manipulate it. But then again, like I said before, the state can regulate it as a sports betting entity.
Right.
Or if it falls under the CFTC, there's a lot of market manipulation rules that we could put in place to help regulate this. But there are some problems, and that's part of the reason why a lot of states across the country are looking at it.
Yeah. What's on your mind, Carl?
Yeah, I mean, I think a couple different things. The idea of insider trading is something that is a major problem, and we've seen that in a number of instances, both big and small. Part of the problem is that these markets are suggested by users, so users can actually send Kalshi ideas about what markets should exist, and some of them are as kind of banal as mentioned markets. So basically, will this chief executive officer say this word during an earnings call? And so you can see how that would be very easy to manipulate. And even more problematic are the ones about government actions, because if we give financial incentives for government actors to make one policy decision versus another, whether they bomb Iran one day or another day, that becomes a huge problem, because I think our government officials should be focusing on doing what's best for the country and not in it for their own personal financial gain. So I think these insider trading problems are an issue. They are a problem across all types of markets, right? So, even if you look at these as sports gambling markets, which I think they are, there's always problems with point shaving, point fixing. I'm sure Noah has more thoughts and knowledge about this.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I think it's an incentives issue, right? Like, I think that most people can sit back and understand that if you want to gamble or place a position on how much rainfall Chicago's going to get in the month of August, right? That's, relatively non-manipulatable. But sports as an industry is extremely susceptible to manipulation historically, right? Over the last 100 years, there's countless examples of sports fixing schemes. The issue in the world of incentives is when you look at, across the general landscape of sports gambling regulation, the gambling boards of respective states aren't actually the ones looking at game manipulation. It usually actually falls on a company like DraftKings or FanDuel, and that makes sense. Right, the governing bodies look for consumer protection, that DraftKings or FanDuel isn't harming consumers or offering, not staying true to their word and promises and following state regulation. But DraftKings and FanDuel, when someone takes a position with DraftKings and FanDuel, it's them versus the sportsbook, right? So there's an incentive that if there is suspicious betting activity, that they're going to investigate it and they're going to look into it and perhaps tip off law enforcement. These polymarket Kalshi is taking a position against others. So that's problematic in two realms. One, do they have the same incentives to make sure that sports, which are very easily manipulatable and historically have been, are being held with the integrity that we would normally expect them to be held? And also, number two is that you know, markets and sports, right? The only people who have that insider information are the people playing and the people close to coaches and players.
Right.
So especially for lines or markets that are like, who will the next head coach be? I see that one all the time. And usually those interviews and stuff happens behind closed doors weeks before.
Right.
So again, who's ultimately getting harmed here? It's the betting public. It's mm-hmm. not people with the information.
As so this all continues to grow. So it'd be interesting to see how it plays out. That's Noah Henderson, who's director of the sport management program at Loyola. Carl Lockhart, who's assistant professor of DePaul University Law School, and Democratic State Senator Michael Hastings. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll turn to the top stories of the day with WBEZ Morning Edition anchor Claire Lane, reporter Summer Van Benton, and John Seidel, federal courts reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times. The top story remains the Middle East conflict. President Trump did not hit the nuke button, but this did lead quite a few leaders to call for his removal from the office of the president. Claire kicks things off with more on who is making that call.
So this is what we know. We know that the U.S., Iran, and Israel have reached a ceasefire deal, and this was reached less than 2 hours before this deadline that President Trump imposed for Iran to meet his demands, or as we recall from a couple of sound bites we heard yesterday, or face wide-scale destruction. Trump officials do say that the deal is contingent on the Strait of Hormuz opening. When asked this morning, we have an update, too, about the fate of the Strait of Hormuz and the critical question of control. Pete Hegseth refused even to say how it would open. We really don't have any guidance on that. But yes, more than 70 Democratic lawmakers are questioning the mental fitness of the president at this point and calling for his removal from office through impeachment or by use of the 25th Amendment. So many of these are left-leaning, we should say lawmakers, but suggesting that the threats that he's been making to destroy the entire civilization of Iran are grounds for Congress to impeach him.
We'll say more on that. Can we say which elected officials from Illinois have weighed in so far?
Yes, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker has joined this list. Pritzker issued a social media post saying that Trump's threats are not foreign policy, but rather, quote, a deranged man threatening to wipe out an entire country. So certainly more to come on this. Republicans in Congress were largely silent.
And certainly more to come on this topic. Summer, tell us how Chicagoans are reacting and feeling about this whole thing, because there's been a lot of outrage and a lot of thoughts,
to say the least. So I covered the No Kings protest that recently happened. It was the third one. And a lot of people said that this war on Iran was their breaking point. They're feeling really nervous. And honestly, the ceasefire didn't really bring any calm or relief, especially considering it's not really clear as to what the ceasefire means or if there's this 2-week extension. It's not really clear. People are also really concerned about what the impact of closing the Strait of Hormuz will have. It's not just increased gas prices, but it's also the impact on energy and farming and grocery prices. So there are a lot of worries, a lot of concerns. And so it's definitely going to be interesting to see what arises and shoot the next couple of days.
Yeah, we're definitely going to keep our eye on all of this. John, in other news, President Trump, he's tried to pressure judges and politicians and lawyers. You recently sat down, though, with Chicago's top federal prosecutor, and he said he won't be pressured by Washington. Tell us more about your conversation.
Yeah, he's adamant about it. We sat down with him for about roughly an hour and a half. It was me and my counterpart at the Chicago Tribune, Jason Meisner, who also covers the building. And, I asked him at one point about concerns that his office had been pressured or had been following marching orders from Washington. I think it was really kind of just like the most striking moment in that interview where he insisted, he told me, write this down, and he said, there's not a single case where politics has influenced their decision making. But look, like there's a lot of skepticism about that. There have been some examples where people feel like maybe Washington is, you know, at least putting its thumb on the scale.
And let's be clear, we're talking about U.S. Attorney Andrew Boutros.
Chicago U.S. Attorney Andrew Boutros, mm-hmm. who just marked his first year in office on Tuesday. And it has been a little bit of a rocky year. His office is responsible for a lot of these midway blitz charges that we've seen. So,
So, I mean, there's been a significant exodus of prosecutors from his office, as you mentioned, a lot of upheaval for a first year.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. So we had Operation Midway Blitz. And as we know, there's roughly 32 defendants charged with non-immigration crimes there. We haven't seen any convictions out of there yet. 20 people have been cleared. It looks like at least one case might be on track for a guilty plea. But we've also seen several veteran, well-respected prosecutors leave the office in what critics have called just an unprecedented exodus. Mm-hmm. And look, we haven't had a thunderclap, lightning bolt moment like Rene Good or Alex Priddy. We've certainly had, all of Midway Blitz was certainly very, very difficult for the city. But this has been a little bit subtler, more nuanced, people leaving for various reasons. He did say some people told him they were leaving because of Midway Blitz. Mm-hmm. Various other reasons. Some people just felt like they couldn't work with this administration. But I also talked to others who say this is happening across the country, and people do leave for various reasons, you know, each person leaving on their own terms.
Right. I mean, so what are his goals then for the office?
Yeah, so he says they're hiring. Their goal is to hire as many 50 new prosecutors. So they say they're working on bringing people in. And despite the claim that Justice Department jobs are not what they used to be, he says he's having no trouble getting applicants. They're focused on gun crimes, violent crime. And, you know, the head of the ATF did say that there's a new emphasis on violent crime coming out of the U.S. Attorney's Office. And just before I close, he did say that he's not done with Midway Blitz cases. This is the U.S. Attorney.
Yeah.
And that they have more work to do on the public corruption front, which is the bread and butter of the office.
They are extremely busy. Summer, let's talk about the library. Do you use your local library?
I do.
I'm curious.
I really enjoy the library.
Do you use the library?
Okay. All the time. My dog loves it too. She waits outside. I get my books. It's like a little routine. And, but for many people, it is.
That.
You've got kids that go there every day, do their homework.
You are a lot probably of resources. Seen it this
way. Yeah. Well, totally. Chicago wants to make sure that more young people do exactly that, that they use it. And so they're expanding access to students.
Yeah.
Tell us more.
For clarity, the Chicago Public Library and the Chicago Public School System celebrated the 81 Club. And no, this is not a club particularly for those that are 81 years old in Chicago. This is a club for those who are students in the public school system. Historically, parents, especially for those who are 14 years old or younger, would need their parents to come and sign them up, show proof of residency, all of the things. But now they are automatically registered with their student ID card. They just go to the library, they do their book searching, and they leverage resources and give their student ID number as their library card. And so this program is huge considering the literacy deserts on the south and west sides in particular, shrinking libraries and schools. It's providing more access to students.
Yeah, it sounds like a natural alliance, a joining of forces, if you will, between CPS and Chicago libraries. I want to play for us what Mayor Johnson had to say about it.
It's about closing gaps and expanding opportunities across all of our 77 neighborhoods. Because when we invest in young people, we are creating stronger communities, a safer, more connected city, and a future where our young people can have access, but most importantly, they can thrive.
I love this as a parent of a CPS kid.
Now there's no excuse for not getting your homework done.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, John, back to the courts. Michael Madigan, that name we haven't talked about in a little bit.
He's back.
He's back in the news. What's going on?
Yeah, so the former Speaker of the Illinois House has been, he's been in prison since October, but his appeal has been working its way through the courts, and it's time for oral arguments. That's going to be Thursday. The Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals is going to be hearing from a new attorney from Madigan, Amy Mason Saharia. Mm-hmm. She's somebody who's, argued before the Supreme Court as well, but she also works with Lisa Blatt, who's a very well-known Supreme Court advocate. They're going to be, this is when cases kind of get a little wonky. They're going to be talking about a lot of legal issues in the case. And don't forget, there was a big Supreme Court decision right before Madigan's trial talking about basically when is a bribe a bribe, bribes versus gratuities. So the impact of that case on his trial, I think they will get into some of the facts about his, corrupt deal with Danny Solis. That's what they're going to be tackling Thursday. And shortly after that, I believe it's Tuesday of next week, the appeals court is also going to hear arguments from lawyers for Anne Pramaggiore and Michael McLean, who were convicted in that related ComEd conspiracy case. And Paul Clement, who is another big shot Supreme Court advocate, he's going to be arguing for Pramaggiore.
So Madigan's got this heavy hitter legal team assembled. It sounds like.
Right. And they all do. They have like very high powered lawyers coming in. These are all fresh faces. These are not, I mean, I think the only lawyer who's going to be involved in these arguments who was involved in the trial is Julia Schwartz. She was a member of the original trial team.
Okay.
Otherwise, we have fresh faces all around among the lawyers.
And what's the end goal here? I mean, is he trying to take this all the way to the Supreme Court? Or?
I mean, I think he wants to get out of prison. That's the end goal. But I think when you look at who they've enlisted, you know, Amy Saharia's co-counsel is Lisa Blatt. She is a regular at the Supreme Court. So is Paul Clement. You could just see like they are, I think, aiming past the Seventh Circuit if they need to. And look, the Supreme Court has taken up some of these issues. The ComEd case also, not only does it involve that when is a bribe case, because those two went to trial before that Supreme Court decision. But there was also a Supreme Court decision regarding Patrick Daley Thompson, the former alderman, and where the Supreme Court had something to say about laws and you know, when something can be when is a lie a lie? That was basically the focus of that.
When is a bribe a bribe? When is
misleading,
a lie a lie?
Is it really false? That kind of stuff. So the Supreme Court has had a lot to say, and they're going to be bringing these issues up to the Seventh Circuit.
This is so Chicago.
Right.
And we get to sort of get another look at Madigan again.
We won't see Madigan. Oh. No, it's just going to be the lawyers, unfortunately. But yeah.
Well,
yeah,
we want to see how he's been doing. Faring in prison.
Yeah,
how are things? It's been quiet.
Claire, why don't you stay in the hot seat there and talk baseball with me?
What?
Yes, your Cubs.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
Bad news. Tough blow for Cade Horton. One of our starters for this year is going to miss the rest of the season, more than likely with a forearm injury. 24 years old, he's likely going to undergo season-ending surgery to repair his UCL. Mm. As we know, he was a major player for us last season.
Starting pitcher.
Yeah, 11-4 record, came in second in Rookie of the Year voting. But this is a big deal because we're already missing Justin Steele and Matthew Boyd. And now with the loss of Horton, you know, we're going to have to be going into the depths to find some pitching relief here.
Yeah. Other stories that you're following?
Well, just to even the score here, there was also an injury on the south side. Just for Sox fans to keep them abreast, Austin Hayes was injured. He's actually going to be now on the 10-day injured list. This was after leaving Monday's game against Baltimore with a right hamstring strain. He just went down, you know, trying to run down a fly ball. It came up short, but he's kind of an expensive player. 30 years old. He signed a $6 million one-year contract with the Sox. Likely this won't be longer than 10 days, but we'll have to wait and see.
All right. Well, Summer, yesterday we talked on the show about how the Chicago Sky's Angel Reese was traded to the Atlanta Dream and just, you know, the outrage from Sky fans across the city. Just a lot of people upset. It seemed to have come out of nowhere. You know, some insiders say, you know, if you were paying attention, you could have seen the writing was on the wall there.
Mm-hmm.
But you're kind of happy about it. I want you to tell the people why you say that.
Yeah, the people can't see I'm cheesing from ear to ear. I'm holding every Chicagoan's hand when I say this, but I am ecstatic to see the Bayou Barbie in Atlanta. As an Atlanta native, this is great for the league. This is great for the Dream. This is great for Angel and her brand. I mean, as soon as the announcement came out, not even 10 minutes later, we see her posting "Peace up, A-Town down." She seems ecstatic. And
well, she also posted a nice thank you video to Chicago.
She did post a nice thank you for Chicago because I think Chicagoans treated her extremely well. I think Chicago loved her dearly. But, you know, all good things do have to come to an end. And I'm excited to see where she goes, where the Dream goes, and honestly, how the league soars. Now, Chicago still has WNBA All-Star Weekend this summer.
That's right.
Which is really awesome and exciting to see the city host. I'm also intrigued to see what the Sky versus Dream games look like.
Yeah, it might be tense. Expo Chicago, the arts festival happening at Navy Pier. We're going to, you know, all three of us are going to start seeing lots more foot traffic over the next few days right here in our building. But you went to it last year, right?
I did.
How'd you like it?
I loved it. Now, I love art. I love culture. And when I tell you this expo is like, it's an art fair on steroids. It's huge. You can get daily tickets, but you could also get tickets for the whole weekend. There's events across the city, from the north side to the south side. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And I think one huge misconception is that you need to come to the art expo and, or, you know, with the thought that you're going to purchase something. But no, this is really a great way for art lovers or those who, that are just curious to
right.
come and talk to the artists themselves, learn about art, take it in, see what's going on, but also just network with other creatives.
I love that. I'm looking forward to the conversation coming up in just a few minutes here on In the Loop. That's WBEZ's Claire Lane and Summer Van Benton and John Seidel with the Chicago Sun-Times.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Andrea Guffman, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.